Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and you are very welcome to the Young Stock Podcast, the podcast by young journalists for young readers and listeners from the Irish Farmers Journal. My name is Peter McCann. I'm the Northern Ireland correspondent with the Farmers Journal. Folks, we're getting through the winter rightly now at this stage, so if you keep the head down in a few weeks, we should be in the bright and sunny days of spring, hopefully, maybe depending on what part of the country you're at. It's turbulent now, a few months so weather, but hopefully better times lie ahead as we face into the calving season in earnest and lambing whenever that kicks off for you. This week, I'm talking to Jack Blaxton Houston. Jack's a fellow agricultural enthusiast, I would say. He's a farmer, a rural surveyor, an AD plant operator based in Dundonald near Belfast. Jack, is that a fairly accurate description, or how would you maybe describe yourself for us?
Peter, thanks very much for having me on. It's great to chat and I regularly listen. I think there's an accurate description. I wear a few hats, but it's all under, I run one company, BH Estates, and we farm, we run renewable energy assets, and we run a consulting land agency, agricultural valuers services across the island of Ireland, and a little bit in England, and we are proud of what we do.
Starting on your farm, just maybe describe your home farm to us and what's going on there from the livestock and crops point of view.
Most active operation is a farm called Carrey in Dundonald, where we have a 500 kilowatt anaerobic digester. We have 300 milking Holstein cows, and they run in conjunction with an out farm in Ballywalter. We have a small stock farm in County Tyrone and hill sheep farm as well in County Tyrone. We have a fairly reasonable forestry operation as well. There's a lot going on the agricultural side of the business. I'm very fortunate that we have some very talented staff members who dedicate great skill and diligence in that area of the business.
Maybe looking at the cows there, and counting you down, the 300 Holstein cows, what type of system is that? Is it a total confinement system, or are cows grazing in the summertime, or how are you managing that?
We like to have our cows at grass as much of the year as possible, have a swing parlour. The cows are out as much as they can. We do all our own AI, have a rainwater harvesting system there. We are producing a very good milk from forage figure, over 4,000 litres a year per cow. We have renewable energy on that site as well, and that's made a huge difference to the profitability because the energy nowadays in dairy is extremely costly, and it's very well run dairy parlour.
So, Jack, you say 4,000 litres of milk from forage. So just like add down, what does that mean maybe in the most recent figures there for yield and meal fed and that type of thing?
So we're pushing towards 10,000 litres a cow, but 9,500. I mean, it's really important for me to stress that the figures are brilliant because we have really skilled people managing those things. So while I say we do all our own AI, it's definitely not me who is allowed to go near the back end of a cow. There wouldn't be any milk next year.
I know what you mean. Like, and is that an issue for you, Jack? I know that you're talking to some farmers, like, I suppose across the island, larger farms like yourselves, when you're managing it, you're maybe not managing cows, you're managing people, and I suppose that brings up a different set of challenges for you. And how do you find that, getting staff and training people to do things the way you would like them to do?
So we place a very high emphasis on making it work for our staff. I'm really proud of our workforce, and we have a very long-serving workforce, some who still full-time have been there since before I was born. We make it work because we want to, and I think this is really important for agriculture as generally, is to make it a career that is attractive to people, you know, to people in competition with other careers. Because if you can be a good quality you could probably turn your hand to a number of other things. Farming needs lots of skills, and we have to, you know, we give appropriate holidays. You're not working 24/7. Pay is commensurate with your skills, and we try and keep pace with pay. And it's really important, all of those things, that, you know, you make it work for employees so that you can retain, attract skilled staff. Because at the end of the day, agriculture, good quality agriculture, is about skills.
Yourself, Jack, personally, what was your background like from your childhood? Did you always want to become involved in the business and the farm? And when you did decide to go down that route, where did you study, or what did you do education-wise?
Despite the accent, I'm born in Northern Ireland and spent most of my childhood, but was schooled elsewhere. I took a roundabout route. I actually did English literature as a first degree, which I enjoyed a lot, although most of the authors were actually Irish. I then went to work abroad. I went to work in Africa. And I learned lots of things there about getting stuff done. After a few years, I met my lovely wife, Emma, and that brought me back to less sunny climates, where I enrolled in a degree which no longer exists. It's a rural land and business management degree at Reading. And that what came with an accreditation to become a rural charter surveyor, of which there are not very many in Northern Ireland. After that, I spent a couple of years in London, part qualified as an accountant because I thought that the skill was a good one to have. And I place a lot of emphasis on being able to do good quality budgets. It's really important. I came back to Northern Ireland. I have now qualified as a rural surveyor and qualified, along with a colleague, trusted colleague, Richard Aldworth, as a fellow of the Association of Agricultural Valuers in the first set of exams that they did in Northern Ireland. So my role in the business is very much at the top of the business, really 15 enterprises running it at any time. And unfortunately, it means that I'm less involved in some of the day-to-day things, but I enjoy my job, and I think that's important.
Well, then, Jack, even go further back from before you, like, I assume your family has been farming in that part of County Down for generations, has it? Or what is the background to that? How long have you been there?
There is a family history of farming in County Down and County Tyrone and County Meath, actually. I recognise I'm in a fortunate position that, you know, I haven't coming into a farm that's already owned. I think that we have traded land over the years, and that is something that we are reasonably happy to do. I think it's important business part of agriculture. You know, if you can secure development on some part of your farm and trade 5 acres for 50 elsewhere, then that's a good deal. Good deal for a farmer. Mm-hmm. Good deal for anybody.
Jack, I suppose just very quickly touching on the farm there in Tyrone, the hill farm. Whereabouts is that? I assume it's in the Sperrins. You said it was a hill sheep flock you run on, or what sort of system is it there?
Yeah, so a very extensive hill sheep flock. We've been in the environmental farming scheme for a number of years up there. So very low stocking rates. About half the land is in commercial forestry, which was, at the time it was planted in the 60s and 70s, was grant aided forestry. Hornies, well run by a shepherd, Tommy Kennedy, who's been with us for more than 40 years now. My hat is off to him. Sheep are a hard business at the moment, as you will know. So the environmental schemes become more attractive.
It is a common thing for farmers to do in that part of the country, all right. And then just very briefly then on the renewables end, you've pretty impressive technologies on your units there. Just looking online earlier, there were some videos of, you know, obviously we mentioned earlier the AD plant, and there's wind turbines, but also you have a slurry separator and that type of thing. Is that all based around the unit in County Down then, or around where you're at in Dundonald?
Although the farm in Dundonald, the farm just on the outskirts of Dundonald, is a reasonable size, 300 cows with followers plus a 500 kilowatt AD, does require some separation of slurries for nutrient management reasons. And we want to be on the right side of the legislation and also do what's right. It's obviously a hot topic at the moment. And we've been working on a project in that area over the last year in partnership with DERA. So watch this space. But we've had a separator at our dairy for more than 5 years, 6 years now. Great job. We recirculate our liquid separate back into our own tank, which I think is a myth that I'd be happy to dispel now, that you need a separate tank. You definitely don't. We cart all the solids to the AD as a feedstock. Works really, really well for us. It works well for our nutrient balances. And the liquid fraction that's left over, it works better with low emission slurry spreading. There's less mixing required. We're not having to go at slurry on the 1st of February because we've a little bit of extra space, having removed the solids. There's a range of benefits. And we've been doing that for a while.
So when you said there about the separate tank, you mean, so whenever you separate the slurry, the liquid fraction, you can put that back into the original tank it came out of? No, does that not mean it's re-separated continuously, if you know what I mean? Or are you only separating one tank at a time? Sort?
You can separate one tank at a time. Slurry will have an average dry, a dry matter, and all slurry will be different because all management is different. But if you're putting the liquid fraction back into the same tank, eventually what will happen is it will become too viscous, too liquid to work any longer, and then the machine will basically stop working. If you've got 2,500 cubic meters of slurry, 200,000 gallons, like, you've got quite a long time and quite a lot of fiber solid fraction in that before it stops working.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And is that separator, is that running the whole time? I actually worked on a farm about 10 years ago, and they had a unit the gap, but it was blown economy 7 overnight, and it just tipped away. Or I suppose maybe the volume of stuff you would have, you're maybe pushing it to the max, is it?
It's not running 24/7. It's not running 24/7, but we've got a fairly sizable one. To be totally honest, running anything 24/7 isn't necessarily a good idea, because eventually something breaks and you want to do the maintenance in a planned way rather than when it breaks. But we don't need to run it 24/7, especially as the cows are out at grass all the time. If they were indoors all the time, then you'd have a lot more slurry. Sure. Runs well enough for us. There is an electrical requirement. It's not that terrible, the electrical requirement, to be honest, compared to the benefit. You have to factor that into your budget if you were considering installing one yourself.
No, I know what you're saying. I suppose back to what you were saying there earlier about becoming a chartered rural surveyor, and I suppose the stupidest question of this interview is coming next. Can you just tell me, like, what is a chartered rural surveyor, or what does that mean, or what does it involve on a day-to-day basis?
It's a very good question. It's not a stupid question, because it's a poor job title. It's a poor description of what a current rural surveyor would do. But essentially what we would do, and we have four qualified rural surveyors in our team and we have one trainee, is that we would give professional or technical advice on land, assets, property, agriculture, which will help farms, help our clients who tend to be farmers. Some would be what you would call an estate, to realize their business or property or their objectives, essentially. And so our job is to support somebody who either normally doesn't have the capacity, but sometimes doesn't have the capability, to tie up all of those different advisors that a farmer might come up against, from their accountant to their solicitor to their bank manager to their insurance underwriter or broker, their HR, we will cover HR, health and safety, you name it, across all of that professional spectrum, planners, development, renewables. That is the job of a rural surveyor. They keep you right, basically.
I suppose I never actually thought of it that way. A farmer gets advice from, even if he doesn't maybe even employed technically advisors, there's advice given to them a lot of the time from different people, and it can be maybe contrary as well a lot of the time. So I understand what you're getting at there. So then you said
exactly it. And so just to dwell on that point a little bit, a rural surveyor, when your planning consultant tells you that that shed could be a house and you could sell it for this amount of money, But your tax advisor says, but hold on, if you do that, then you're going to run into an inheritance tax problem. You're a rural surveyor or a land agent, as you may have called them in the past, would help you negotiate that windy route of what is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I suppose like when you said there about you were involved with the Rural Valuers Association here in Northern Ireland, is that just basically around that rural surveyor role, or is one of your enterprises involved maybe more in land valuations and even land sales or letting? Is that something you dip into at all?
Yeah, I'm a fellow of the Association of Agricultural Valuers. That is a qualification that isn't only about valuation. It's another job title that, or qualification that really doesn't make that much sense. But the Northern Ireland Rural Valuers Association has been fantastic in supporting a program of professional development for young people and older people interested in taking that qualification in Northern Ireland and providing the professional development training opportunities to build those skills. Because if you look at Northern Ireland and in the Republic of Ireland, where the same issues really apply, we are going to have a lot more control of our own destiny in the agricultural sector. And to do that, there needs to be skilled professionals out there providing balanced advice to some point in the future, and it may be far-fetched. We move away from Conacre. It may be desirable. If you move away from Conacre and you move into a tenanted land sector where you have long-term tenure, there needs to be professional people who can write those agreements. And in England, in Scotland, in Wales, that would be a rural surveyor or an agricultural valuer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we don't have that skill set in Northern Ireland at scale.
Definitely not. And as you say, not a common thing at all yet to hear, other than maybe something that's a very well replicated template or something, just to tick a box for a scheme or whatever. Not a proper tenure in earnest. I suppose, Jack, there, you were also involved in the Next Generation Committee with the Ulster Farmers Union. Could you give us maybe some background to that, how you got involved in it, and maybe what you took away from it whenever your time was up on the committee?
Yeah, so the Next Gen Committee is a great idea, and it's well executed as well, because it's all very well having a good idea and then executing it poorly. But essentially what happens is it's a specific committee in the Ulster Farmers Union that is for young people interested in agriculture. You don't necessarily have to be a farmer. Most committees in farming unions are, you're either co-opted or elected onto those committees, and that can take some time. But this is a great way to get new blood into a committee in the UFU, and also to expose, and I was exposed to some very, very talented people on that committee. You're there for a two-year period, and during that time you're exposed to new ideas, challenges, you get to go on trips, you get to contribute to some of the policy advice, communication, campaigning that the UFU, the Ulster Farmers Union, might do. I find it immensely valuable, and I would encourage, the applications are actually open at the moment. I think this will go out before they close. The applications close on the 22nd of January. And I think you can find the link on the UFU website.
Yeah, we can share that. Just talking to you, Jack, like, a lot of what comes back is your passion, for people getting involved in farming. It isn't necessarily, a lot of times you talk to farmers, they talk about their stock or their land or whatever. Very interesting, the people end of thing, and that social aspect of getting, particularly young people, like as you said, great people came through that Next Generation committee within the UFU. So if you see a young person there, or you see someone thinking of entering agriculture, like, what sort of skill set do you think do you need to succeed to pursue a good long-term career within the agriculture industry?
I actually don't think you necessarily need to come at it with any qualifications. I think a lot of, and it's almost sometimes more beneficial to come at it with no qualifications, because the amount of change and the pace of that change means that if you, you know, if you do a qualification, then as soon as you get into work, then the whole situation may have changed. Not to cast aspersion on, there is obviously a merit to those as well. You know, a willingness to work hard, a willingness to be confronted with problems and have to think slightly outside the box. You need to be able to understand people, because at the end of the day, farmers are very, very much, it's a people orientated business, and farmers do well, talk to their neighbors, people minded.
I suppose, Jack, then, if there was like a listener listening to this podcast, potentially thinking about going into agriculture, pursuing a career in it, what sort of advice would you give them, like, before they take that leap, or indeed when they do?
It depends on what depends which area you would like to work in. If you want to work on a farm, that is different to professional services. But if you want to work on a farm, go ring your local farmer, because the shortage of good quality agricultural workers across the country is acute. Be prepared to do some long hours. You can have a great fun. If you want to work in professional services, do a little bit of research into the areas you might like to work in. If you can, do some work experience. And if you can't, then there are good membership bodies across the island of Ireland. There's the Northern Ireland Rural Values Association. There's the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors in Northern Ireland. There's the Society of Chartered Surveyors in Ireland. And there's an organization called IPAV, which is Auctioneers and Valuers in Ireland. And so contact those. But again, there's so many careers in agriculture. You could become a chartered insurance broker. You could become a health and safety advisor. You could become an agricultural technologist or an agronomist or a sustainability advisor. You know, there's so many different avenues. There really is something for everybody, but we do need skilled people.
Some more advice from me. If someone was listening to this podcast who, like yourself, you know, has a reasonably sized farm and depends on hired labor or you know, people on the payroll, and are maybe struggling to get that, what advice would you give them for to have what you're able to have there, as you say, some people with you for very long periods of time? And I suppose it's also worth pointing out that that's quite an achievement, you can say, for your farm, because you literally live on the edge of Belfast, where there are for some of your staff, like, a lot of career opportunities literally on their doorstep. So what advice would you give someone who's looking to hire staff and keep staff long term?
If you're running a reasonable farming operation, paying people appropriately, an obvious one, but there are some key things that just make a huge difference. An appropriate amount of work. So if you are chronically understaffed, you will find that staff will move. It's unrealistic to expect agricultural workers to do 75-hour, 80-hour weeks every week. You know, you need another you need another team member there. If you're housing workers, and that is a common thing to do, especially on larger farms, you know, accommodation's got to be of sufficient quality, because if you're a skilled farm worker and you're housed, you could be a skilled something in something else. So it's got to be worth their while, because most people work to live rather than live to work. And I think respecting that's important. Other benefits like providing adequate training opportunities, or you know, giving appropriate responsibility are things that I would see work well on both our own farm and also our clients' staff retention.
Fair enough, Jack. It's great to get some advice from both ends of it there. As you know, and you said at the start, you're a regular listener to the Young Stock podcast, so you'll know what the final questions are. It's the infamous quick fire round. It's a key part of this whole experience for you, Jack. So it's the Northern Ireland edition of the quick fire round, obviously, because some of these words are meaningless to Jack and myself, so I've had to tinker with it a wee bit. Jack, as you know, I'll just give you the options for various words, and you tell me what your preference is or what the correct answer is. Is it a sprong, a fork, or a grape? Lions, Barry's, or Pajana tea?
Coffee.
A breakfast roll or a chicken roll?
Breakfast roll.
Bales or pet silage?
Depends on the size of the farm.
I was suspecting in your farm, Jack, it would be pet silage if you'd order the day with us from.
We still have bales, and I still have a family member who loves hefting silage.
Sure, Wellington of choice, Dunlop or Bikina or Uller?
Dunlop.
If you're out for dinner, would you go for a starter or dessert? Oh, yeah. That's actually the most common answer for that I've found over the years in this podcast. A rotary parter or a herringbone? Your preferred method of tillage, plough or mintill? And would you rather pick stones or foot turf?
Pick stones.
Pick stones. Fair play. Listen, Jack, honestly, thanks very much for taking the time to talk this there. It was a really broad overview of all the different things you're at there, and we kind of touched on a lot of ground in a reasonably short space of time. So I said, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. So folks, that's it for this week's Young Stock Podcast. Folks, I'm Peter McCann. Thanks for listening, and again, thanks to Jack for taking the time to talk to us. I'll see you all again shortly.
We're currently looking for young people across Ireland to interview on the podcast. If you know someone who's under the age of 35 that has an interesting story, career or experience that you want to share, then send on their name and get in touch with the Young Farmers Journal team. We want to give a voice to young people across rural Ireland. What issues are currently bothering you? Get in touch by emailing youngstock@farmersjournal.ie or send us a WhatsApp voice note to 086 83 66465.